New engine technology is super important because if we are ever going to get new airliners to replace the ones we have today, well, then we need newer and much more efficient engines. It's just as simple as that. The CFM RISE is an exciting and very promising engine that could help bring that new generation of cleaner and better aircraft into existence. So today I'm going to answer some of your questions about it and why Boeing now seems a little bit skeptical about it. Stay tuned. Fuel prices have been a headache for the aviation industry ever since the first oil crisis back in the 1970s. But something that many people maybe don't realize is that because of this, the fuel prices have also been directly affecting aircraft designs. For example, turboprop aircraft have often seen a rise in demand for regional and short-haul routes whenever the fuel price have been going up, since they are generally more efficient on those routes, partially due to their lower cruise speeds. But then, as soon as the fuel prices have been dropping again, well, then the airlines have generally been going shopping for smaller jet aircraft instead, since they are faster and also a bit quieter for the passengers. Now, we have all recently also gotten a bit more environmentally conscious, adding yet another reason why we all want to see better fuel efficiency on top of the obvious one for the airlines: money. This is why we have lately seen an increasing call for new, extremely efficient aircraft, and that's only a few years after both Boeing and Airbus actually introduced new versions of their single-aisle jets, who are already 14 to 15% more efficient than the previous generations. Now, as I've explained in previous videos, neither Boeing or Airbus have officially launched any new aircraft to replace their best-selling single-aisle jets. But I have also at the same time pointed to the fact that both of them have been studying something that might eventually fill that role. Airbus, for example, have been working on a group of concepts under the generic name Next Generation Single Aisles, or NGSA, which involves a number of new designs and manufacturing technologies. And Boeing have on their end been working together with NASA on their project called the Transonic Thrust Braced Wing, or TTBW, now officially known as the X-66 Alpha. That's the name that NASA gave the test aircraft that Boeing will build for this project, which is based on an old MD-90, and this aircraft should start test flights as early as in 2028. Now, both of these concepts are looking at different ways of increasing the fuel efficiency by, among other things, improving the design of the airframe, which is basically every part of the aircraft except for the engines. There is a lot to be gained there, thanks to recent access to new lightweight materials, as well as super high aspect ratio wings. Think glider wings, basically. Now, I'll get back to those airframes and their improvements soon, but the reality here is that the by far biggest improvements in aircraft fuel efficiency will always, always come from the engines. Basically, for a new generation of passenger jets to make any kind of sense, especially for the narrow bodies that make up most of the world's fleets, we need a new generation of more efficient engines. So, what kind of engines can we look forward to then? Well, Pratt & Whitney has his PW1000 Golf geared turbofan family, which is already available in various sizes for different aircraft. Now, they are also looking at developing a second generation of those engines, which I'll also get back to soon. The other engine maker, whose engines power a lot of single-aisle aircraft today, is CFM, which is a 50-50 joint venture between General Electric in the United States and Safran in France. Their latest operational engine is the LEAP-1, which powers a lot of the Airbus A320neo family jets, all of the 737 MAXes, as well as China's C919. And of course, CFM are the ones that's also working on the unique RISE engine, where RISE stands for Revolutionary Innovation for Sustainable Engines. Now, the idea behind the RISE is to increase the bypass ratio of the engine substantially in order to boost its efficiency. As I've explained before, to get more power out of a jet engine, we can either push the same amount of air backwards at higher speed, or we can push more air backwards at the same speed. And the latter method, more air, low speed, is the more efficient way of doing things. Older turbojet engines pushed a small amount of air really fast backwards, which made them both quite inefficient and loud. Now, a lovely sound in my ears, but it's quite an acquired taste. Now, turbofan engines are like turbojets, except that most of the air is pushed backwards by a large fan in the front. And then it goes around or bypasses the engine core, which means that those engines have what's known as a big bypass ratio. Now, modern turbofan engines, like the CFM Leap and the Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan, have bypass ratios in the order of 11 or 12 to 1. And the Airbus A320neo version of the Pratt & Whitney GTF actually reaches as high as 12.5 to 1. As far as I know, that's the highest bypass ratio of any operational engine in use today, at least until some version of the Rolls-Royce gigantic ultrafan engine enters service, that is, but we'll see when that happens. But the CFM Rise, thanks to its unshrouded open fan design, will have an effective bypass ratio of around 20 to 1. That's an incredible improvement over the latest generation of turbofans, which are still pretty new, mind you. The potential of this engine design was very well understood already back in the late 1980s, which is why both General Electric and Pratt & Whitney were actually developing versions of these engines already back then. But they both later abandoned the idea, basically because the technology in materials and aerodynamics just wasn't ready yet. And as it turns out, there is still some skepticism around these engines. I actually made a video about the Rise about a year and a half ago, and one of the main questions in the comments back then was, aren't these engines just repackaged turboprops? Why are we going backwards from jets to turboprop designs? Well, I will explain the answer to that, plus why Pratt & Whitney aren't going down the same road, and why now even Boeing seems to have their reservations. But first, since we are on the topic of the latest in aviation technology, I feel like this is a great opportunity to flag how you can stay secure and maybe even save some money on your next flight. The answer is today's sponsor, NordVPN. Nord works by masking your actual IP address and giving you a new one based on your preferred location. If you first clear your cache, you can then move your location to a country where the prices for booking rental cars, flights or hotels are lower, and then just book from there. But there is much more you can use NordVPN for, like accessing geo-blocked content, which we do a lot when we're researching for these topics. And last but not least, they provide some truly excellent cybersecurity tools, like ad blockers, web trackers, and even a tool that scans files that you want to download for malware. If this sounds interesting, then use the link here below, which is nordvpn.com/mentornow for 4 free months when you sign up for the 2-year deal. And as always, it's completely risk-free since Nord always gives you a 30-day money-back guarantee. Thank you, Nord. Now, where was I? Oh yeah, differences between turboprops and open fans. As I often do with technical topics like this one, I'm going to turn to Björn Färm and his excellent work in Liham News. He is right now writing a fantastic series about new engine development, and in that series he's explaining all of these factors in great detail, which I'll link to in the description below. Anyway, in one of his articles, Björn went into some length to explain how propeller designs have evolved alongside engine design in order to make sure that all of the power that the engine produces can be utilized through the propeller at different speeds and speed ranges. Now I'm going to oversimplify this a little bit here, but basically, as engines have become more powerful through history, they started needing propellers with either larger diameters or more blades, or even a combination of both, to really make the most out of all of that power. And as engine development moved forward, the invention of jet engines soon also led to turboprops, which are really just jet engines driving a propeller. But the problem with turboprops was that since they were so powerful, they would require really large propeller diameters to really maximize their potential. And if those propellers got much larger, well then the tips would start to go supersonic at high power outputs, and that would make them significantly less efficient due to the creation of shock waves at the tips, which would also make them very, very loud. Now, increasing the number of blades instead of increasing the fan diameter could partially solve this problem, and the fact is that turboprops have progressively gone up to 6, 8 or even more blades over time. But even then, the tips of the propeller blades, who actually move both forward and laterally as the propeller screws itself forward through the air, will ultimately move considerably faster than the aircraft itself. And that means that a turboprop flying as slow as Mach 0.6 could actually have propeller tips flirting with Mach 1. So what do you do if you want to cruise faster than, let's say, Mach 0.75 or 0.8 like jet aircraft do? Well, that's when you move from the turboprop to the open fan design, which is designed specifically for these speeds. So in a nutshell, there isn't much difference between turboprops and an open fan. The open fan, prop fan or unducted fan, whatever you choose to call it, is really more of an evolution of the turboprop technology into designs that allows for higher cruise speeds. And if you think of it like that, it's not really a new and untested engine design. It's actually quite well understood. Now, to make these higher speeds possible, the fan blades on the rise have had to be designed slightly differently than on conventional turboprops. That's why you can see them being swept slightly backwards in order to avoid that premature supersonic flow. And the other thing that has to happen is that they also need to spin those blades slower. To do that, the fan needs to rotate slower than the other components inside of the jet engine, which is accomplished with the use of a gear reduction system, in other words, a gearbox. Now, that's not a huge issue, since we already have turboprop engines with such reduction systems in them, and there are actually plenty of jet engines with geared fans too. As the name suggests, Pratt & Whitney's GTF, or geared turbofan, is the latest one of those to enter service, but actually, those type of engines have been around since the 1960s and 70s, although they were quite a bit smaller back then, and initially it also took a while for their gearboxes to get strong and reliable enough to handle airliner-sized thrust levels. But this begs a question. If the latest manufacturer to make a geared turbofan is Pratt & Whitney, then why aren't they using this same technology to make their own open fan design? After all, they tried it 30 years ago with the Pratt & Whitney Allison 578 Delta X-Ray, so why not try it again now when newer materials and more reliable gearboxes are available? Well, this is where I will have to explain why existing turbofans are using gear reduction systems to slow down their fans in the front. And fair warning, we're going to get a little bit nerdy here. Now, bear in mind that a gear reduction system or gearbox suitable for a fan normally needs to be quite heavy, since it also needs to be strong enough to handle a lot of thrust. Remember, most of the thrust from modern high-bypass turbofans is generated by the fan, and that means that the fan basically pulls the rest of the engine and the aircraft forward through its shaft and the gearbox that's connected to it. And yet, the Pratt & Whitney PW1100G geared turbofan is actually a little bit lighter than the equivalent CFM LEAP 1 Alpha, which produces more or less the same thrust. How can that be possible when the LEAP engine doesn't have a gearbox and the Pratt & Whitney engine has one? Well, as it turns out, having a big heavy gearbox means that a lot of other parts in the engine can be made simpler and therefore lighter, much lighter. The reason for this is that all modern jet engines are working with a contradicting set of requirements in order to be as efficient as possible. As I said earlier, the fan at the very front needs to spin at a relatively slow speed to offer the best efficiency and the lowest amount of noise, but a lot of other areas in the jet engine must ideally spin at much higher speeds. The turbine, for example, near the rear of the engine, which is spun by the jet's exhaust gases, gains efficiency with speed, and it's the low-pressure turbine stage that drives the fan in the front through a shaft. You see a problem? Without the gearbox between these parts, engine designers needed to figure out how to slow down the low-pressure turbine enough to keep the fan from going too fast. And they have usually done this by adding more and more turbine stages, often giving them larger and larger diameters. The same goes for the low-pressure compressor, who sits just behind the fan. It also needs more stages if it's going to operate at a slower speed and stay efficient. So putting a gearbox between the fan and the rest of the engine means not only that all parts can run at more ideal speeds, but also that the engine can be simplified, reducing the number of turbine and compressor stages altogether. As an example, the CFM LEAP 1 Alpha engine has 3 low pressure and 10 high pressure compressor stages, followed by the burn chamber and then the 2 high pressure and 7 low pressure turbine stages. By comparison, the Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan also has 3 low-pressure compressor stages, but only 8 high-pressure compressor stages, and then 2 high-pressure and just 3 low-pressure turbine stages. I told you I was going to get a little bit nerdy, didn't I? Don't worry, it's downhill from here, but if you like this kind of stuff, don't forget to click like and subscribe below. I'll wait. So having fewer compressor and especially turbine stages saves weight, despite the weight of the gearbox. But this is only the beginning. The fact that the fan up front spins slower also means that there is less forces acting on the fan itself, which means that the fan, which is obviously a huge assembly of parts, can also be made much lighter. And it gets even better. Since the fan is both lighter and slower spinning, its blades also have less energy in them. So if one of those blades would happen to break off, well then the fan casing, constructed to kind of contain these blades, will be subjected to less force and can therefore be made less robust, saving even more weight. And I'm sure you can see why that little detail about the fan blades having less energy is also quite relevant to the open fan engine. Yes, the possibility of a fan blade out event is something that many of you asked questions about in the comments of my previous CFM Rise video. So how are CFM going to deal with this problem? Well, first of all, CFM will be using advanced composites to make things like fan blade fatigue cracking extremely unlikely. But they still need to consider blade out events caused by other things, like bird strikes, for example. And here comes the good news. As Björn Färm explains in his engine series, the diameter of the CFM Rise is actually very similar to the propeller diameter of an ATR-72's engine. And thanks to lightweight carbon composites, the Rise engine's fan blades won't be any heavier than the turboprop's propeller blades. And since the gearbox is there, the RPM of the Rise engine will also be similar. This means that each of the fan blades of the Rise will have the same or even less energy than a propeller blade on a typical turboprop. So the mitigation and certification strategies to make turboprop aircraft viable, like a slight strengthening of the body next to the propeller, should make the CFM Rise viable too. There could also be more developments to help with this, like frangible composites for the blade tips. And unlike previous open fan designs, the Rise engine has only one rotating fan disc. The rear set of blades are there simply to deswirl the airflow behind the fan in order to regain about 5% of its efficiency. So then, what are the reservations about these open fans then? Why is Pratt & Whitney not developing one, and what is making Boeing skeptical about it as well? Well, for Pratt & Whitney, the simple answer is that they seem to believe that their geared turbofan engine still has plenty of room for development. An improved version that can make use of advanced high-temperature materials that CFM already uses in some parts of their existing engines could deliver a double-digit percentage improvement over their current engine. And that engine will still, of course, then be a conventional turbofan in terms of how it will be installed, whilst by comparison the Rise engine, at least in the form that we've seen it until now, is obviously a departure from what a typical jet engine looks like. And that isn't just a matter of aesthetics. As I've explained in previous videos, the large diameter of the CFM Rise will have implications on how it can be mounted onto aircraft. CFM has suggested a few different options, but the point is that aircraft will likely need to be designed specifically with this engine in mind. And that means that using these engines will likely come with a bit of a weight penalty. In the case of Airbus, we saw that they are probably planning for a low wing design, which is usually the most weight efficient option since the wing box and the landing gear can then be grouped together. But the Airbus concept that we've seen also has a bent wing with a kind of gull wing shape, likely to make sure that the plane's two engine fans doesn't scrape into the ground. Now the inclusion of that bend in the wing will incur a small weight penalty, so the extra efficiency of the Rise engine over a geared turbofan will get a slight hit by the need for a heavier airframe. On top of that, even if a broken fan blade has little energy, the aviation authorities will still likely require some of that strengthening of the fuselage that I mentioned before, which would obviously add another weight penalty. And all of these factors put together are known as the installation weight, something you typically want to keep as low as possible. So what about Boeing then? What are they worried about? Well, the interesting thing about them is that their transonic thrust brace wing demonstrator already has a high wing layout, which, like I mentioned, comes with a weight penalty in itself compared to a low wing design. But the super long, extra high aspect ratio of its wing should compensate for that. So in theory, this should make a large diameter engine like the CFM Rise a kind of no-cost option for Boeing in terms of additional installation weights at least. But That's assuming that Boeing is still thinking of the transonic truss brace wing design as the most likely layout of their next airplane. And if they're having second thoughts about the RISE engine, as Aviation Week believes, then perhaps they're having second thoughts about the aircraft layout too, which I personally think is highly likely, because I would love to see how much crosswind that thing will be able to take. There is also another interesting operational consideration when it comes to the RISE engine. According to sources, Boeing has also voiced concerns about the fact that the large propellers on the RISE could cause aerodynamical differences between the flow from the left and right engine, since the deswirling is not 100%, but I personally find that a little bit hard to believe. After having talked to Björn myself, I find it more likely that the airflow from the RISE would interfere with the truss braces on the wing in a way that causes interference drag, which might make it less efficient compared to a standard ducted design. Finally, Aviation Week also reports that Boeing is actually thinking of offering their next aircraft with more than one engine option, something they haven't done on the 737s ever. Unlike Airbus, who offers two engine types for its Airbus A320neo family, Boeing only offers different engine options on wide bodies like the 787 or older designs like the 767 and 757. If Boeing wants two different engines for the next aircraft, well, then the CFM RISE might be very tough to justify, assuming that the other option is a conventional ducted turbofan. And that's because the turbofan version would obviously have to use the same airframe as the RISE engine version, suffering additional unnecessary installation weight penalties as a result. Having said all of this, CFM has also stated that the RISE engine is a development program that includes more technologies beyond just the open fan design itself. This includes features like the geared fan, the miniaturized engine core, and the extended use of advanced high-temperature materials. All of these innovations will be part of whatever other engines that the company launches in the near future, even if it turns out not to be such a radical new design as the RISE. Now, what do you think? Would you want to fly in an airline with the CFM RISE engines, and do you think Boeing's next plane will have them? Let me know in the comments here below. Now, consider supporting me by supporting my sponsors, or help me out directly by joining my awesome Patreon crew. It's soon time for another Zoom hangout, and I would love to see you over there next time. Have an absolutely fantastic day wherever you are, and I'll see you next time as well. Bye-bye.